Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Donald Gregg, who was the United States Ambassador to South Korea from 1989 to 1993 and CIA Station Chief in South Korea from 1973 to 1975. He served as the National Security Advisor to Vice President George H.W. Bush from 1982 to 1988. And he has an article in Monday's Los Angeles Times, Reaching Out to North Korea. Obama showed on his Middle East trip the power of direct presidential involvement. He should employ that same sort of diplomacy towards Pyongyang. Welcome to Background Briefing, Donald Gregg.
Delighted to be with you.
And I've talked to a number of South Korea watchers and specialists recently, and there's a feeling that this time, in spite of previous rounds of bellicosity and a couple of real live incidents, the sinking of a warship and the shelling of an island, that this time around, one, the South Koreans may not turn the other cheek, and two, there's a concern that this young leader in North Korea has rhetorically dug a hole for himself out of which he can't get out unless he actually does something. So is that the dynamic that's at play at the moment?
Well, I'm concerned about those things. I am concerned at what the South Koreans have said in retaliation for anything from the North. I've always been concerned about how uptight the North Koreans get during large-scale training activities, which we undergo, and these are going to go on for the rest of the month. So I think the tension is high, and I think the stage is set not for a deliberate attack by the North Koreans. I don't think he thinks in that way, but I'm concerned about a mistake or a miscalculation that could escalate rather rapidly. So that's why I think it's very necessary for us to make some kind of a move toward a real dialogue. I met with the North Koreans quite recently in New York, and they said, well, we sort of, at least for the moment, given up on our diplomats. They were unable to stop the sanctions from going through the UN. And now all we're interested in talking to you about is a peace treaty. And there is no way we're going to give up our nuclear weapons as a price for talking to you. And you've got to talk to us about a peace treaty as we are, and that's the only way forward. And I think that's very difficult for Washington to accommodate itself to, because I think there's a coterie of people there who have built their credibility on pushing for regime change or saying that North Korea is going to collapse or that talking to them is rewarding bad behavior. And it's very difficult for these people to say, okay, we'll try one more time to talk to them. That's why I urge that there be some fresh thinking and some fresh faces involved in our North Korean policy.
Well, at this point, it seems that perhaps the opposite is happening from our side, given that the B-2 bombers flew over recently, and now the Pentagon's announced it's sending the F-22 fighters, stealth fighters, the latest in the U.S. inventory, to South Korea. So the question would be then, given that the North Korean regime has had sort of state-manufactured paranoia for some time, is that a mechanism by which the regime controls the people, or are they genuinely paranoid?
I think it's a bit of both. I think they are paranoid. I think the leaders of North Korea have used the threat from outside for generations as an excuse for some of the hardline policies they have taken domestically. And I think that they are genuinely concerned about us. And when they see our B-1 flying around and stealth fighters flying around, that feeds into the paranoia. And that's why I see this sort of escalation of tit-for-tat rhetoric for maneuvers or rhetoric for new weapons. It needs to be halted, because the tension gets higher and higher. I don't think Kim Jong-un is crazy. I think he has a greater sense of what the outside world is like than either his father or his grandfather. I think he desperately wants to talk directly to the United States, but at this point there's a real reluctance on our part to do it. I was just on the phone with Israeli radio. They wanted me to talk about North Korea, and I had seen a marvelous Israeli film called The Gatekeepers, which was, essentially an intelligence officer. I wound up as ambassador, but I spent 31 years with CIA, and I basically think like an intelligence officer, and I always think you ought to talk rather than fight. And I think it's very hard for the Israelis to talk to the Palestinians as their retired intelligence officers say they should. And I think it's very difficult for the Obama administration to get its act together and begin to talk to the North Koreans in the face of this blistering rhetoric on their part.
Well, I thought the most powerful thread through that film, The Gatekeepers, Donald Gregg, was that all of these former heads of Shin Bet all said the same thing, which is that Israel only has tactics. It doesn't have strategy vis-a-vis the Palestinians. So could you apply that to South Korea, that we're just operating tactically, whether it's George W. Bush's policy of basically finding them too distasteful to deal with, or what President Obama's people call
strategic patience,
exactly.
Yeah. No, I don't think either of those really are what it's going to take to solve this problem. And it's we have a terrible tendency in this country to demonize those we neither like nor understand. I spent 4 years in the Vietnam War, which is a war we never should have fought, as we absolutely demonized Ho Chi Minh. Even with Saddam Hussein, who was a horrible man, we said, well, of course he has nuclear weapons, and of course he's in bed with al-Qaeda, because of look at all the other horrible things he's done. Well, he didn't have nuclear weapons, and he wasn't in bed with al-Qaeda, but that war was sold to us. And, you know, I'm already casting in my mind the cast for the film that will talk about the justification for a new war in Korea, and I have somebody in mind who would play the role of Douglas Fife, but good temperament keeps me from mentioning the name.
Well, let's hope that we don't get to that, but it does seem that the situation is extremely tense, and our escalating it with shows of force are not helping. Does it really come down to the fact that we simply can't swallow our pride and won't talk to this regime and essentially acknowledge its existence?
I think there's a lot of that. You know, I've spent so long in Asia, the problem of saving face is something that's always in my mind. And actually, I think the key player in all of this is Park Geun-hye. I think it's astonishing that one of the most chauvinistic societies in the world, i.e. South Korea, has elected a female president. And I know her. I met her years ago when I was there as chief of station. And she's a remarkable woman. And Kim Jong-il was talking to the head of South Korean intelligence and said, you know, I wonder if Park Geun-hye would come north and talk to me. And the South Korean intelligence officer told me, he said, well, you know, she's had a pretty tough run. You twice tried to kill her father, and then the second time trying to kill her father, you killed her mother instead. And the North Korean said, yeah, well, we know that, but we wonder if she'd talk to us. And so he said, I'll see. And she went to North Korea. And I encountered her at the opening game of the World Cup in 2002, and she knew who I was, and I knew who she was, and I said, I want to congratulate you for going to North Korea. And she said, we have to look to the future with hope, not to the past with bitterness. So she's a remarkable woman. And her new policy, I was in Seoul 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I met her new foreign minister, and he said, well, her policy toward North Korea is called trust politik. And he said she wants the world to know that's a direct descendant of Willy Brandt's Ostpolitik and No Taeyu's Nordpolitik. And she wants to build confidence with North Korea. So John Kerry, for whom I have great admiration, is going to go see her in Seoul in a couple of weeks. And then a couple of weeks after that, she's coming to Washington to see President Obama. And so I'm hoping very much that out of those two meetings can come a different approach to the North.
Again, I'm speaking with Donald Gregg, who was the United States Ambassador to South Korea from 1989 to 1993 and the CIA Station Chief in South Korea from 1973 to 1975. And he served as National Security Advisor to Vice President George H.W. Bush from 1982 to 1988. And he has an article in Monday's Los Angeles Times, Reaching Out to North Korea. Obama showed on his Middle East trip the power of direct presidential involvement. He should employ that same sort of diplomacy towards Pyongyang. Now, obviously, if the White House is not taking your advice, and it doesn't seem to be at this point, then the last link between the North and the South is that sort of enterprise zone in the North that has had a number of manufacturing plants from the South and a number of South Korean workers there, and it's a source of hard currency for the regime. Would you see that then as closing down the final link, if that were to happen?
Yes, I think that's that caisson.
Yeah.
And there are under 1,000 South Korean workers there and about 50,000 North Korean workers there. And the fact that that is still going is, I think, of tremendous significance. And I think it is a signal that Kim Jong-un means what he says when he's working toward economic development of his country. Now, North Korea has got a lot of attractive options for foreign investors. It's mineral rich, it's water power rich, and there are a lot of things that could be developed there once there was some sort of economic tranquility established. So I can't think of anything that would alarm me more than having Kaesong shut down. I would then think, well, they're in their tank and they've battened up the hatches and we're in for a hell of a fight. But they have not done that, and I hope to goodness they don't do it.
So in your op-ed piece, Don Gregg, in the Monday's Los Angeles Times, you talk about your experiences with the autocratic government of the father of the current president who you admired and who went to North Korea in spite of the fact that North Koreans agents had shot her mother, I think it happened in front of her, in fact, in an attempt to assassinate her father, that essentially you were able to stop the kidnapping of the North Korean opposition leader who the KCIA, the South Korean intelligence people, had put on a boat to nowhere. And you point out that rather than confront them directly, the ambassador sent a letter which gave them time to change their plans and essentially save Kim Dae-jung's life. He later was sent into exile here in the United States and then became elected president of South Korea. My understanding is that one of the problems in terms of dealing with North Korea from the point of view of the South has been that even with the sinking of the warship and up until the shelling of the island, which certainly got the attention of the South Korean people, but prior to that, the South Korean people had an enormous amount of sympathy for the North and didn't believe their own government because of these autocratic regimes that had preceded them. So is that still a fact?
I think it's a generational issue. The people who are my age and still remember the horrors of the Korean War are much less sympathetic toward North Korea than the younger people. And so it's a generational issue. I think the matters you mention are very important because I've been to North Korea 5 times and I see the Koreans as pragmatists, and they don't like being cornered and they don't like being confronted. And down through the centuries, I mean, they refer to their own country as a shrimp among whales. And down through the centuries, when they've been cornered or confronted, they have fought their way out. Think of Admiral Lee Sun-shin and his turtle boat, who rallied and defeated the Japanese at the 1585 or something like that. So that's what scares me about our tendency to sort of drive them into a corner. I think that's very foolish of us. And, if by any chance a war breaks out in the Korean Peninsula as a result of this, the epitaph for it eternally would be, why did we fight them when what they wanted was a peace treaty? And I just hope that John Kerry, with whom I have met with North Koreans about a year ago, I think he's a very astute man. I think he's beautifully prepared to be Secretary of State, and I'm hoping very much that he will consider an approach that involves dialogue with North Korea, because that's what I need, what we need, in my view.
Well, apparently during the Bill Clinton presidency, things got so tense that Jimmy Carter, a former president, just simply went over there on his own with a CNN crew and essentially inserted himself in the situation to, you know, calm things down.
That was in 1994. And the thing that saved our bacon then, we had reinstated the Team Spirit training operation, which I had suspended as ambassador, because when I was ambassador there, the first thing I did was suggest that we get our nuclear-capable weapons out of South Korea. And George Herbert Walker Bush, who I think was a magnificent president, took that as a sort of the start of a move to remove all of our tactical nuclear weapons globally. And that was, you know, a very important and very good thing to do. But we then reinstated the Team Spirit operation, and the North Koreans pulled out of the NPT and referred to turning Seoul into a sea of fire. And Jim Laney, who was my successor as ambassador, president of Emory University, knew Jimmy Carter very well, and he called up President Carter, who he knew had a standing invitation to go to North Korea, and he said, it's time for you to come. And so President Carter reached out to the Clinton White House, and the Secretary of State was very much opposed to Jimmy Carter going, but Al Gore thought it was a good idea, so off he went, and he met Kim Il-sung and had a very good talk with him. And actually, Kim Il-sung was preparing to have a summit meeting with Kim Jong-sam, the president of South Korea, at that point when he died. And it's tragic that he died at that point, because had they had a summit meeting, I think a lot of this would have been avoided.
So what does that say, though, Donald Gregg, about our politics and the extent to which our presidents have dug a rhetorical trap for themselves, in as much as North Korea has been demonized for so long that talking to them would be a sign of capitulation and cowardice?
Well, I think Bill Clinton avoided that. I mean, he, at the end, thanks to wonderful work done by Bill Perry, his Secretary of Defense, he invited Marshal Joe Myung-rok to Washington, who went to the White House in full uniform and invited Bill Clinton to visit Pyongyang. And he wanted to go. He sent Madeleine Albright to sort it out. She had 11 hours of discussion with Kim Jong-il. And she said, I found him highly intelligent. But time ran out, and Clinton wasn't able to go. And then in came George W. Bush. And a year later, the North Koreans, having done nothing to deserve it, were suddenly cast into the pit as part of the axis of evil with Iran and Iraq. And the North Koreans have never gotten over that. I mean, when I first went there in 2002, they asked me three questions. The first one was, why is George W. Bush so different from his father? And I said, well, we're a big country, and, you know, George Jr. was raised in Texas, and his father was raised in New England. And then the second question was, well, how do you function as a country when you elect people who have nothing in common with their predecessor? And I said, well, that's the way democracy works. You have what we might euphemistically call continuity of leadership, so you don't have that problem. But we vote against presidents whom we don't like, and people come in who do things very differently. And they said, well, that makes it very difficult for a country like us to keep up with you.
Well, just in closing, Donald Gregg, what would you advise this president to do if indeed things are as tense and to some extent heading towards a collision from which we may not be able to retreat before a great loss of life? So,
I don't think it's quite that bad, but the way to defuse it would be for the North Koreans are very hierarchical. They get along with me pretty well, but they said, you know, you could come up here forever, but you can't solve our problems with your government. You're not high enough ranking. So I think the key would be for Secretary of State Kerry, who has a good credibility with them, were to send someone to them to say, look, we're ready to talk about a peace treaty. We want to avoid this confrontation, and we recognize what you're driving at, and so let's get down and get at it. But who he sends and whether, you know, what the Republicans, I used to be a Republican, and I've left the party. I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole at this point. I think, you know, they are just would be dead set against anything like this, but I hope that President Obama and Secretary Kerry can be strong enough and sensible enough to realize that dialogue is the only way out of this confrontation.
Well, Donald Gregg, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thanks for your good question.
Again, I've been speaking with Donald Gregg, who was the United States Ambassador to South Korea from 1989 to 1993 and CIA Station Chief in South Korea from 1973 to 1995. He served as National Security Advisor to Vice President George H.W. Bush from 1982 to 1988, and he has an article in Monday's Los Angeles Times, Reaching Out to North Korea. Obama showed on his Middle East trip the power of direct presidential involvement. He should employ that same sort of diplomacy towards Pyongyang. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the murders of prosecutors in Texas linked to the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas.